This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedure Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issue held on the 16th of February, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Michael Fleming. Please begin.
Good morning, everyone. It is a cold morning in Tokyo, and I don't have my sweater, so if I sound a little shivering, my apologies. But thank you very much for adjusting your schedules and being able to be with us today. I have the power to scroll. Thank you, everyone. Today we will be just looking at the terms and conditions, as well as discussing CC2 questions and any other business. Does anybody at this time have any other business they wish to discuss this time, call this call around? Sorry, this at this call? If not, then we'll probably skip over this. Hopefully. All right. First of all, SOIs. Does anyone have any updates to their statement of interest they wish to disclose? If not, then we will move on. No? All right, then let's move on. Terms and conditions. So a little background information, a part of the terms and conditions. I'm sure everyone is aware that the terms and conditions are actually a portion of the applicant guidebook listed in Module 6. And along with applying for a TLD or a GTLD to ICANN, they are something all applicants must agree to. And it is a binding document upon applicants once they submit that application. This actually can be found at the link provided here. We will be referencing the terms and conditions today, but if probably for your own convenience, it might do well to open this in a separate tab or PDF. So a little bit of background information. The terms and conditions themselves are split into 14 sections. I provided a table that kind of summarizes these. We're not going to read exactly in the module from the terms and conditions all of these sections, as that would be very boring for everyone today, but we'll be referring to a few of them. But just for everyone's convenience, I have taken the liberty to proportionately summarize these into the terms and into this table, and I will quickly go over it. For section one, this basically means that applicants warned that information in the application and supporting documents is true and accurate, and in the event of any change, they need to notify ICANN. Section two deals with the fact that the applicant has the authority to make the application on behalf of the applicant. They must certify that they have the authority. Section 3 means that the applicant agrees ICANN has the right to determine not to proceed with any and all applications for new GTLDs. The decision to review and delegate any new GTLDs after approval is at ICANN's discretion. Section 4. Applicant agrees to pay all fees that are associated with the application. Section 5. Applicant shall indemnify ICANN from any third-party claims rising out of ICANN's consideration of the application or ICANN's reliance on information provided by applicant. Section 6. Applicant releases ICANN from any claims by applicant related to ICANN's review, applicant's withdrawal, or ICANN's decision of application. Applicant agrees not to challenge ICANN in court in regards to any final decision made by ICANN in regards to the application. Section 7. Applicant agrees to ICANN publishing application information and materials submitted to ICANN while observing that certain information will be kept confidential. Sorry, I couldn't fit everything on one page, so we'll move on to the next slide. Section 8. Applicant has obtained permission for posting of personal information and to allow ICANN to conduct background screening investigation. Section 9. Applicant gives ICANN permission to use applicant's name in ICANN's public announcements. Section 10. Applicant understands rights in connection with the GTLD are only acquired in the event of executing a registry agreement with ICANN. Applicant may not assign applicant rights in connection with the application. Section 11. Applicant authorizes ICANN to contact and consult individuals, entities necessary to discuss or obtain further information in regards to the application. Section 12. Applicant understands and translations are made of applications but English. But English is the official binding language. Section 13. Applicant understands that ICANN works with Jones Day, a law firm consultant, and to allow Jones Day to represent ICANN. Section 14. Applicant understands ICANN reserves the right to make updates, changes to applicant guidebook, and application process, and that application will be subject to such changes. Such changes are made after application has been submitted and presented. In present material, hardship to ICANN, ICANN will work to accommodate the applicant. That is the 14 sections in a nutshell. Of course, the actual language of each section is much more in depth and can be interpreted, I think, in a bit more ways still. Just for everyone's reference, I took the liberty, if there are any mistranslations or misconceptions in there, please excuse me. And if necessary, please voice that at the necessary time. However, out of these 14 sections, I think a lot of them are pretty much as they are, as meaning you need to take it they can be taken pretty much as necessary when applying. However, there are a few in there that seem to stick out with everyone, and they're very much questionable. So as part of this discussion, we've taken about three discussion points, or in three different sections, of course, and we have decided that we need to read this aloud and receive feedback from everyone in regards to those specific sections. So our first section that we'll be looking at is Section 3, ICANN reserving the right to determine not to proceed with any and all applications for new GTLDs. For everyone's convenience, Steve, could we switch over to Section 3 of the Module 6, please? I personally am going to be reading from a PDF, which is much easier, but... Alrighty. Yes. Okay. I am going to read this aloud for those of our friends who are just on the audio bridge. I will read it. Try to be as slowly and sweetly as possible. Alright. Section 3 of the Module 6. Applicant acknowledges and agrees that ICANN has the right to determine not to proceed with any and all applications for new GTLDs, and that there is no assurance that any additional GTLDs will be created. The decision to review, consider, and approve an application to establish one or more GTLDs and to delegate new GTLDs after such approval is entirely at ICANN's discretion. ICANN reserves the right to reject any application that ICANN is prohibited from considering under applicable law or policy, in which case any fees submitted in connection with such application will be returned to the applicant. So I'm hoping that I read that swimmingly as well. However, I think a little bit of background information. I personally do not have the knowledge in regards to why this section is there. The last portion of the sentence, and I see that John Nevitt is actually getting to this as well, the last sentence in regards to ICANN reserving the right to reject any application that ICANN is prohibited from considering under applicable law, I think is very much applicable. However, already discussion going on, wonderful. However, I think we need to open up the door here to everyone to provide feedback as to what they feel might be wrong with this specific section. And Alan, you've already got your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, the last sentence clearly is an out, saying if we're not allowed to do it, fine. I can see, at the time this was written, I can see a rationale why ICANN would want a pretty unlimited right to reject everything. Because, you know, something could have become obvious in regarding the DNS or something that would just make this whole thing something too dangerous to do. The right, however, to what seems to be the right to unilaterally reject a specific application without any mention of why they could do that does sound a little bit unusual. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I'm sure a lot of us can agree on that. It does seem rather unusual indeed. So there's a lot of discussion here going on in the chat. Really like it if some of you guys could jump on audio. And I know I have a very sweet voice, but I'm going to plus one, Alan. So Jeff has his hand up, but before that, I just want to look at what Mike Rodenbaugh has provided. The first two sentences, if taken literally, make the entire contract illusory. ICANN has no obligation unless it chooses. So that does seem a bit fishy. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry. It took me a second to get off mute. This is Jeff Newman. I agree. I think we should, as a policy matter, again, not to rewrite the language, but we should recommend that ICANN, while it has some discretion, needs to be within the confines of the policy and the applicant guidebook or applicable law. I don't think it should be as unfettered as it is right now. And I think that Alan is absolutely right. At the time, this was a first time to do things and, well, in theory, a first time. And, you know, I think I can use this in some cases, but then refuse to acknowledge this entire clause in other cases where, you know, I remember Don Nevis was one to argue a number of times that, you know, look, you are changing things and you are actually probably more of another provision. You are materially harming us by changing this. So I think once we come up with recommendations to on how changes could be made, and predictability, I think that there's no need for this unfettered discretion. So, yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. We have more additional information in the chat, and we'll be looking at the Section 14 as well in regards to the making those changes. Mike Rodenbaugh has stated that ICANN has relied on this language in IRP proceedings against my client. So I think it can also be rather relevant to the work track 3 as well. Yes, work chart 3 for the objections as well. One piece of information, if anybody has it, I think would be really beneficial. Was this specifically the module 6? Was this introduced? Was in any policy, GNSO policy, reflect anything that is actually within this? That is in relation to this module 6. I mean, any information or any of the terms and conditions, did any GNSO policy provide any recommendations that came out into the, that we developed into the terms and conditions? My knowledge in regards to that is no. I think that this is more of an implementation that was introduced by ICANN to protect themselves. Does anyone have any knowledge in regards to that? I think that'll be necessary when we look at the additional sections as well, just to consider if we can, to what extent we should make policy recommendations or to provide advice in a way. I can. Jeff says this is not based on policy recommendations. So I think it can be interpreted that in the past, ICANN did not rely on any policy recommendations when filing this. So, therefore, I think it was probably unexpected for a lot of individuals. But, of course, he's speaking with a grain of salt. That's why this time around, we should be able to provide ICANN with some recommendations that would be good in terms and conditions. So, are there any additional points on the Section 3 in regards to ICANN being able to reject any application at their discretion? Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Although I'm not sure this is an area that ICANN or perhaps anyone has a great amount of interest in opening up, it would be really nice to know under what conditions this clause was invoked, where there wasn't some other provision which allowed ICANN to not proceed with the agreement. You know, there's all sorts of objection processes and, you know, all sorts of other checks and balances that allowed ICANN not to proceed. But it would be nice to understand to what extent this was ever used.
Thank you, Alan. Mike Rodenbaugh has provided a bit of insight saying how this has been used in IRP proceedings, but other than that, I can understand, and I think that's really good. Mike, please go ahead. Nice to hear from you. Mike Rodenbaugh, you're on mute. Please go ahead and speak if you'd like.
Hey, sorry about that. You hear me, Michael?
Yep.
Loud and clear, Mike. Go ahead.
Oh, great. Thanks. Well, so I just wanted to speak to how they have used this language. You know, in the whole point of this program, you know, I think most of us would agree, dividing, you know, this 400-page guidebook was to take sort of discretion away from the ICANN board. You know, there were scenarios that we drafted that if you, you know, pass objection, blah, 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 then you should proceed to contracting that are, you know, in Section 2. But then at sort of the last minute, ICANN Legal inserts language like this and with the covenant not to sue, another binding, glaring example, you know, that basically makes them unaccountable for any decision that they make, whether an applicant has, you know, succeeded in all the objection processes or not. Actually has happened in several cases.
Thank you, Mike. So there have been cases, and we have witness account, and I should be careful I use that word, of course, but we do have those examples, and we have individuals who have experienced this being used. So I think what we need to take is we need to take some kind of recommendation that we need to be able to take some kind of recommendation to ICANN stating ICANN needs to be accountable for the decisions they make that are not within the scope of the guidelines that are provided in the applicant guidebook. However, at the same time, they are not unaccountable for decisions that they have made freely. If a decision is made in lines with the applicant guidebook, then I believe everyone is able to go out to be able to understand it and take that decision because of what the applicant guidebook allows for that decision to be made. However, when those decisions can be taken indiscriminately, to some extent towards applications, then obviously it becomes a very difficult, endless road for what ICANN is unaccountable for. A few individuals may still be on audio. Could we mute ourselves, please? Thank you. So I think we are leaning in the right direction for more discussion. I'm going to go ahead and move on, in the interest of time, to the next section. Steve, we don't need to go back to the slides. I think I can just jump. I think the next one was section 6. Let me try to... Oh, yes, the favorite, everyone's favorite section. Still large, can't even fit on one screen. All right, I will scroll down. I'm going to read from my own PDF, but just bear with me a moment. So Section 6 deals with the right for applicants to take ICANN to court. This has been the topic of much concern in many recent lawsuits involving ICANN, and I think has been interpreted one or two different ways, has been interpreted unenforceable and then enforceable in two different court decisions in regarding, for example, .Africa. I think there are other cases that this has been used in as well, but I would very much appreciate everyone else to provide any knowledge, any feedback or any background information they may have into this as well, as this is a very hot topic section. But please, of course, allow me to read it, and I will try to do it as slowly and sweetly as possible once again. So, Section 6, Module 6. Module 6, Section 6. Applicant hereby releases ICANN and the ICANN-affiliated parties from any and all claims by applicant that arise out of, are based upon, or are in any way related to any action or failure to act by ICANN or any ICANN-affiliated party in connection with ICANN's or an ICANN-affiliated party's review of this application, investigation or verification, any characterization or description of applicant or the information in this application, any withdrawal of this application or the ICANN decision by ICANN to recommend or not to recommend the approval of ICANN of applicant's GTLD application. Applicant agrees not to challenge in court or any other judicial fora, any final decision made by ICANN with respect to the application and irrevocably waives any right to sue or proceed in court or any other judicial fora on the basis of any other legal claim against ICANN and ICANN-affiliated parties with respect to the application. Applicant acknowledges and accepts the applicant's non-entitlement to pursue any rights, remedies, or legal claims against ICANN or the ICANN-affiliated parties in court or any other judicial fora with respect to the application shall mean that applicant will forego any recovery of any application fees. monies invested in business infrastructure or other startup costs, and any and all profits the applicant may expect to realize from the operation of a registry for the TLD, provided that applicant may utilize any accountability mechanisms set forth in ICANN's bylaws for purposes of challenging any final decision made by ICANN with respect to the application. Applicant acknowledges that any ICANN-affiliated party is an express third-party beneficiary of this Section 6 and may enforce each provision of this Section 6 against applicant. Apologies for the dramatic reading, but the last several sentences there are it seems like a very large run on myself from what I could read, but is on all capital letters. So obviously this is something ICANN wants explicitly to communicate to the applicant. To make a long story short, basically this says that that no applicant has the ability to take ICANN to court outside of the ICANN-approved dispute or remedies for remedying dispute. Yes, besides any accountability mechanism in place within the ICANN within the ICANN structure for challenging decision. So, does anyone have any thoughts on what might be wrong with this section? None? So everyone's okay with having this section as is? Mike Rodeval, please go ahead.
Okay, so no, definitely not, particularly when you couple it with ICANN's arguments that they make over and over again in every IRP proceeding that an IRP panel can't instruct ICANN to do anything. Now, a number of those IRP panels have disagreed with ICANN and have instructed ICANN to do things, but that's still ICANN's position. I believe it's a position they're going to take even under the new bylaws. That language has not changed. Workstream 2 and the accountability mechanisms haven't seemed to really address the problem very directly either. And so, you know, given the fact that ICANN can't be taken to court, and IRP panel under ICANN's view can't tell ICANN to do anything, that makes ICANN entirely unaccountable with respect to the TLD program. They can do whatever they want.
Michael, you might be on mute.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. Jeff and then John, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. So there's bells back and forth on this, and this is kind of a personal opinion. So in general, I think ICANN needs a, based on history in the mid-2000s, I think there's a strong need for a covenant not to sue ICANN in general. But I don't think it should exclude things like fraud, willful misconduct, or gross negligence. For those of you that remember back in the mid-2000s, I won't mention the party, but there was a fairly large lawsuit involved in the potential reassignment of a or rebid of a top-level domain. And that lawsuit, while many thought there was not really any merit to that lawsuit, the fact that it had to go to court and be fought out for many months with a very limited ICANN budget at the time, now I know the budget's a lot greater now, it practically bankrupted ICANN. ICANN was, my personal view, was forced to settle, and I believe the settlement was not as much in the public interest as it should have been, because I think they were being drained of all resources. So, with that said, a couple things. Number one, I think they do need a covenant not to sue, but it should exclude fraud, it should exclude willful misconduct, gross negligence, and perhaps it should also include an ability to enforce things like an IRP or to enforce any kind of appeals mechanism. And that brings me to the third point, which is appeals mechanisms should be strengthened, or actually included, number one, because there really weren't any appeals mechanisms. And to the extent that there were, they should be strengthened. And I believe that's a topic for work track three. Thanks.
Thank you. John, please go ahead.
Thanks, Mike. And I agree, actually, with Jeff, where that ICANN needs to be more accountable to the app signed up and paid, you know, whatever the application fee is. And if there's an appeals mechanism that's strong, if there are other mechanisms in here to protect applicants, then a covenant not to sue may not be so bad. You know, what we were faced in this round with the prospect that, having gone through a couple IRPs, ICANN, as outside counsel, makes the argument that no matter what happens, essentially, that, let's say in an objection setting, in one case where there was a claim of bias of the panelist, ICANN said this was a third party, so no matter what happened in that process, it doesn't matter in the IRP because the IRP standard is so high that ICANN needs to be shown to have violated its bylaws. So the Jones Day lawyer actually said that even if there's evidence that the panelist took a bribe from one of the parties, ICANN would not be required to overturn that because it was a third party and ICANN wouldn't be in violation of its bylaws. So faced with issues like that, unless we have a very strong appeal mechanism, unless we have accountability mechanisms that work for this setting, so maybe there's special accountability mechanisms for in this contract for the next round, where if ICANN just got it wrong, made a mistake, did something maybe even less than Jeff said, gross negligence, maybe it was just pure negligence. They were negligent in doing an evaluation, or they were negligent in performing some other function under the AGB. Applicants can't be left with the only prospect of going to an IRP or asking reconsideration, which is the board making the same decision, and then going to IRP where you have to show that ICANN actually violated its bylaws. Being negligent is not a violation of ICANN's bylaws. And so, you know, the covenant not to sue, may be acceptable if there are other protections in the AGB or whatever contract we have in the next round, if those are in place. Without that, then I think having this covenant, broad covenant not to sue, is a bigger problem. Thank you.
So I'm hearing that we need to have, that obviously ICANN shouldn't be open to being sued by just by anyone and for any reason. But there needs to be parameters, there need to be reasons, there need to be borders set in place for what ICANN is and is not responsible. This is good. Let's see what we can't make for policy recommendations in regards to this specifically. Honestly, I'd like to take the whole call to actually discuss how we could do that. But I think taking this over email about how we could further set down or what kind of wording that we could have for such kind of recommendation would be a good idea. In the interest of time, I'm going to move on. Thank you, everyone, for the wonderful feedback. I think this is one of the best meetings we've had. Section 14 is another fun one. I'm going to read from my own PDF, so I'll be unable to see what's going on in Adobe for a moment. This one also, oh wait, might be able to get it on the screen. Nope, okay. Steve, can I ask you to adjust that a little bit when I reach the lower portion, reading vocally? Thank you. So I will read this one my sweet and soothing voice as well, once again. Module 6, Section 14. ICANN reserves the right to make reasonable updates and changes to this applicant guidebook and to the application process, including the process for withdrawal of applications at any time by posting notice of such updates and changes to the new ICANN website, including as the possible result of new policies that might be adopted or advice to ICANN from ICANN advisory committees during the course of the application process. Applicant acknowledges that ICANN may make such updates and changes and agrees that its application will be subject to any such updates and changes. In the event that applicant has completed and submitted its application prior to such updates or changes, an applicant can demonstrate to ICANN that compliance with such updates or changes would represent a material hardship to applicant, then ICANN will work with applicant in good faith to attempt to make reasonable accommodations in order to mitigate any negative consequences for applicant to the extent possible consistent with the ICANN's mission to ensure the stable and secure operation of the Internet's unique identifier systems. So, this is the Section 14. Basically, ICANN has the ability to make changes to the applicant guidebook after it's published and will provide, and if in the event and the applicant was submitted after the changes were made, they will work with applicant to make sure any hardships are relieved. My first impression of this is, give me a break, but I'd like to hear from other individuals. It sounds like these three sections are actually working together in regards to how they're being used by ICANN to cause hardship in some ways. But would anyone like to provide their opinion on what might be wrong with this section? Please don't all rush to raise your hand at once. So everyone is fine with ICANN being... Oh, Susan, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Susan Payne. The thing that was the problem about this one, I mean, was something that was actually very difficult to explain to clients. You're expecting them effectively to make a commitment to proceed and to put a lot of resource behind this. I mean, it's just the kind of application fee that's being paid. There's a lot of sort of work and potentially third-party fees that companies were incurring before they made their application. And you're saying that you're sort of expecting effectively them to be bound by contractual provisions that they don't actually know what they are. And obviously you can say, well, you have a remedy, you can withdraw your application. But the applicant is not recompensed for that if the rules change under them. And we all saw in the last round that the rules frequently changed as we were going along. And I don't think that's acceptable. I know there were good reasons why some changes need to be done, but, you know, for whatever reason, you know, the advice came out of the sidelines or whatever, but, things were still being changed as people had already applied. You know, the applications were closed and things were still changing. And it's not acceptable because it's unilateral. It's not something that's been agreed by the two parties to this, you know, contract. It's unilateral and being imposed after the event.
Thank you, Susan. No, I agree definitely. Personally speaking, Jeff, sorry, let me raise, I'm arbitrarily raising my hand just very momentarily. I just want to say I quickly agree with Susan saying that for my own clients, you know, working with, especially with brand TLDs, a lot of them see ICANN as similar to a government body. And please don't jump on that. But basically, meaning when it comes to the Internet, basically have to follow what ICANN says. And when ICANN has the ability to make changes, it screws us all over. We plan this entire process based upon the guidebook, and then all of a sudden some advice comes up saying that we can't use such and such names because they conflict with these government entities or these government word for it. Rubens, you're really good at acronyms. You can help me out. But because it conflicts with some IGOs or whatnot. But it completely throws a monkey wrench into the whole process. And once again, seriously, come on. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Two things. First, I think with respect to this section, one of the things hopefully we're working on in the overall issues is a mechanism for better predictability and a better change process. So if that comes to fruition and we're all happy with that change process, then I think that applicants, in terms of conditions, this Section 14 should be bound by that change process. So it's, subject to ICANN following the procedures set forth in whatever the change process section is, then you could have the right to make reasonable changes, et cetera. It's bound by a certain process. And also, I just want to take note of put something into the chat. I know it's on the last subject, but I put a statement together, which no pride of authorship could be worded any way you want, but would love to get some input on that statement, which was up on the chat. I think that that might help. As Steve says, there's only one volunteer for that drafting team, but I think there should be.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Steve, for the laugh. Could we take Jeff's statement, kind of bold it out in those notes, and see if we can't circulate that? I'll personally take it and circulate it as a policy statement for looking at the what we can put as a recommendation to ICANN for the last section. And hopefully we get the feedback on email. Wordsmithing over discussion like this is so difficult, isn't it? Either I think coffee or alcohol should be provided when discussing contracts. But yes, need to apply to adhere to the. I'm just going to stop on that. Okay, let's move on. Unless anyone has anything in regards to this that they'd like to discuss in this last section 14. There's a lot of chat going on here, and it's very lively, and I very much enjoy that. But I'm not going to read from it right now in the interest of time. Is there anyone that really wants to have something read, but they can only chat have it on chat? Because they're not connected via audio? No? I only see Ruben's typing. Okay. Then we're going to move on. So that will conclude our discussion on the terms and conditions today. I should ask this question. Does anyone feel that we need to discuss any of the other sections, or that we should be looking at any of the other sections in regards to what we should be providing advice on? Recommendations. It's only advice if it's an advisory committee, right? Yeah, let's pull up that table. Steve, sorry, can we switch back to the PowerPoints, please? Okay, let's go back up here to this table. So, again. That's what I try to zoom in on this. Zoom in. Okay. Give people on call not a chance to respond. Of course. We will, Jim Penderas, I am, of course, will not allow, will allow people not on the call a chance to respond as well. This call will not conclude any of our discussions, but, we are just kind of trying to introduce the topics and get people active in discussing. And any final decisions will, of course, be made in the end of the overall PDP working discussion. So just very quickly, I'm currently displaying the sections 1 through 7. Once again, I'll go through them very quickly. Applicant warrants. So basically the applicant needs to make sure all information is correct when submitting it to ICANN. Section 2, the applicant must have the authority to make sure that to make the application on behalf of the applicant. Section 3 is what we did discuss that one. Section 4, applicant agrees to pay all the fees associated with the application. Section 5, applicant shall indemnify ICANN from any third-party claims arising out of ICANN's consideration of the application. I think section six deals with the court, like the taking ICANN to court specifically. Maybe section 5 should be considered along with that. Like court involves says that indemnity deserves a closer look. At least should be consistent with narrow release of claims and covenant not to sue. Yes, I felt personally that these two go hand in hand together, so I think we need to treat them together when we go through that. So Section 5 is up for consideration as well, perhaps. Section 7, applicant agrees to publishing applicant information, applicant agrees to ICANN publishing information, and agrees to ICANN observing that certain information will be kept confidential. So basically, this will go up on the website, but certainly necessary information needs to be kept confidential. Okay, let's go to the sections 8 through 14. All right, so section 8, ICANN has obtained permission for posting personal information. Sorry, applicant has obtained permission for the post for ICANN to post information publicly and for ICANN to conduct background screening investigation. Section 9 looks at applicant gives ICANN permission to use applicant's name in ICANN to public announcements. Section 10 once again deals with applicant understands. Sorry, I'm getting a lot of white spaces on my screen. I need to switch over. Susan, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I've got my hand raised on 10. It's kind of twofold. I recognize there are all these other bits about, you know, the application, there's no guarantee you'll get your application and so on, but this seems unfairly weighted against the applicant. I mean, I think if you have met, you know, if your application has met the rules, there ought to be some expectation that you'll get awarded your application. So I think this one might warrant looking at. And the second part of it, I think, also warrants looking at, just because the T's and C's said that the applications couldn't be assigned. And I'm pretty sure that has happened on a number of occasions. So it seems like that warrants being looked at, even if only because this one hasn't been honored, I believe.
No, Susan, that's good. Thank you. And I think Mike Gordonbaugh stated before Jeff posted his revised statement. Sorry, I've got to scroll over here. That the Section 10 needs some clarification. All right. So let's take a look at Section 10 as well. I'm just going to keep going down the list here. Section, a lot of white blimps on my screen. Section 11 looks at the applicant authorizes ICANN to applicant authorizes ICANN to contact and consult individuals, such entities, to discuss or obtain further information in regards to the application. So, nobody said we needed to look at Section 11, correct? Okay, good. Section 12 looks at applicant understands translations are made of applications, but English is the official binding language. I think we can leave that one alone, personally. But Section 13, applicant understands that ICANN works with Jones Day and to allow Jones Day to represent ICANN. Do we need to look at Section 13? Sorry, I don't think I have the latest chat. Oh, okay. All right, and then we are currently looking at Section 14. So additionally, we need to look at Section 5 and Section 10. This is good. I think we have a good sense of direction. Rubin states, doesn't that limit ICANN's options on legal firms? I don't think so. I think that it states that ICANN, this is for if any other applicant is working with Jones Day, and if there's a confliction, then applicant still understands that ICANN works with Jones Day. I don't think it limits ICANN's ability to work with other law firms. Okay, then it's not a problem. Yes, as Steve has stated, the language on the screen is a summary and it's entirely my own typed version of a 6-8-page document, just to highlight the overall statements. So I would recommend that everyone go and review the applicant guidebook module 6 when they can, just to make sure that they have no other concerns about any other of the sections. And in the interest of time, I do not think we're going to have any time to go over CC2 questions. So, in regards to CC2, I briefly introduced CC2 questions last week, but we didn't go over any of the specific questions. We just looked at the topics. So, what I'm going to do is I'm not going to go over the topics again, obviously, because they're on the same page that we've seen 150 million times, but the CC2 questions, we need to buckle down and get those questions organized. What we'll do on a follow-up to the call is we will, staff could put this as an action item to merely circulate the link for Working Track 2 questions to the Working Track 2 action item or reminder, more for me. Just so we can start buckling down and get those started. There's already about maybe 2 or 3 questions per each topic that we're discussing, but this is going to be probably the most important part of some of the work we do. In order for us to get feedback from the community, we need to have the right type of questions solidified. A lot of those questions are directed on what we've already discussed at this point. And for a lot of the topics we haven't gone over, we're doing the best we can to try to get as much feedback as possible. Steve, go ahead and send that reminder. We'll send that to a reminder to the whole working group, of course. But I'd like to concentrate for our working track to send that to the working track too, of course. I don't rather not cut it short, but I think this is a really good stopping place. Does anyone have anything else they wish to discuss in regards to the terms and conditions, something they feel that absolutely must be said? If not, I'm going to carry this discussion over to the mailing list, because obviously a lot of people have some opinions, and this is good feedback. Yes, Jeff, as Jeff stated, please review the notes. But I'm going to follow up with an email that highlights what we did, a little bit what we discussed, and let's see what else we can get from this discussion, especially for Section 5 and Section 10, since we haven't had anything on that. But anyways, everyone, it's 7 o'clock here in Japan, and I need to get my son ready to go. So, all right, then, thank you very much for your time. Have a lovely day. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.